The artist is Zbigniew Molski, Polish, from Białystok in Poland. I think some of his mudras he invented himself. Like this one. What's that? He's a great guy. He teaches in a high school in Poland. And Poland's very conservative Catholic country. So he's a closet Buddhist because if the parents of his students found out that he was a practicing Buddhist, he probably would lose his work and his job. So he has to be very, very careful. He's a very, very generous guy. When he had the opening at Amaravati, he's quite poor, really. He's a teacher, but they don't get paid much. And he said he's a good artist, and he made 60 beautiful little Buddhas from resin and, what did he use? He used some kind of a stone powder with resin. And the really refined work he did on these things, and he made this 60 of these, made a big box of it, took a bus from Poland to London, which took him like 2 days or something, and then just gave these Buddhas out to everyone. So it's got really big heart. So when I see that, it's Bijak, and what's this lady's name? She's an artist too. Oh, it'll come. Anyway, back to the truth. So I suggested to just, make suggestions which work for me. So that one suggestion I made about like taking an object in meditation and really honing in on something small. So the breath here, that's quite the breath at the nose is quite a common way of meditation. That's basically what Ajahn Chah taught me. He said, just look at your breath at your nose, and that was it. You work the rest out. He never emphasized technique. He emphasized the whole lifestyle of care and mindfulness and emphasized a lot, just simple things like learning to wash your alms bowl properly and carefully, and taking care of your the hut you live in. So sometimes he would walk around, do a kind of inspection. He wasn't that kind of a monk, but sometimes he just by walking around he'd see, and then the next day we might get a really, kind of a tongue lashing, like, you guys, you're trying to be mindful and your kutis are all sloppy, and he can be really tough, really, really, kind of, really, really tough. And which, kind of got us all chivied up. And then sometimes he would think we're too lazy and he'd just say, okay, those kutis are too comfortable. They weren't that comfortable, it was just a wooden box, right, with no mosquito screens. And he said, everyone out. Get out of your kutis. So we'd all have to sleep in the woods. Right beside our kutis, and I'd be, that's perfectly good. Why do I have to be with these ants? And so after about 3 days, we'd all sneak back into our kutis. But he became increasingly less able to teach because he had some malfunction in the brain. I think most of you know he was paralyzed for 10 years. He didn't teach for two. He taught a different way. But he's a very earthy man. I just heard a story yesterday from Venerable Chunda, which Ajahn Pasano passed on. In Thailand, in northeast Thailand, where Mopacha is from, they eat sticky rice. And sticky rice is sticky, so you can make it into a clump. So there was very little curries and things. So the basic diet was a large lump of rice and then whatever you could spice it up with, and a bit of fruit, mango. So we used to make these kind of, before we had the, we'd come back from alms round and our bowls would have a lot of rice from the alms. And we'd take how much rice we need to make a bowl out of it, smaller or bigger, and then send the rest of the rice back to the kitchen, and then later on the food would be passed out. But one day Lompa Pasano was sitting beside Lompa Cha at some function, and Lompa Cha is making his bowl. Lompa Pasano is making his bowl, and Lompa Cha says to Ajahn Pasano, "I just can't pack it in the way I used to." Right, this is a kind of so ordinary. That's what I'm going to say. Perhaps the most ordinary way of meditation practice is just being aware that you're aware. And just do that for the rest of your life. That's very ordinary, isn't it? You know when you're here. So we call it awareness, knowing awareness. It's very ordinary, but actually can be very, very powerful, because it's no longer concerned with the object. Because in any subject-object kind of meditation, there's me and there's the object, and there's a danger of you kind of getting stuck in that holding pattern. So people can focus on an object and get very tranquil and blissful, but then when the object's gone, they quite often haven't really purified the heart. So then the same patterns of fear or confusion or whatever come up again, and they can get confused. So they think that they need to kind of hold on to the object of meditation. And Ajahn Chah, his example of that was like, well, you put a rock on the grass, and the grass doesn't grow, but as soon as you take the rock off, the grass grows again. Another teacher says, well, it's like a horse in a stall. You know, it's kind of in the stall, but it's kind of stuck in the stall. So that's one of the, doesn't necessarily have to be that way. So when I like to talk about meditation, I like this sense of the, you know, what awareness is. And then it's a mindfulness with awareness with the breath. That's the way I like to talk, because I think it's the mindfulness that I think is important to sustain. And again, it's just words, but they are a perspective which I try to pass on. So awareness of awareness is like when you're sitting and you start sitting and you kind of have a program, whatever you like to do, and then something grabs your attention. You need to deal with this at home when you get back, because if you don't do that, this is going to happen, and so you're going to lose track. And then again, there's some, maybe someone coughs, and then you're aware again, and you know you're aware, don't you? You know you're there again. So rather than then trying to be more aware, you are aware. And then just begin to practice awareness of awareness, just that, awareness of awareness, or aware that you know you're aware. And there's no real language to that, it's just knowing, awareness of awareness. And then you make a kind of intention, okay, that's what I'm just going to do, I'm just going to notice awareness of awareness, and see what happens with that. Some people find that, they say the mind turning to the mind. Kind of, sometimes they call that choiceless awareness, or although you are making a choice. You're making a choice to do that. And any intention has choice in it. So in terms of meditation, it seems to go from like very coarse, almost willful doing, to more and more refined, and more and more I think you question the very sense of the doer, that sense of this always this doer having to meditate, having to do this. You begin to feel that there's too much of a doer in this, and that begins to fall away, and then there's a kind of more simple, just awareness of awareness. And even that sense of me being aware of being aware, that falls away. And that takes you to the ideas of emptiness or void, or not empty of consciousness, but just empty of self, a self doing something to become someone. In terms of like more the more willful parts of, willful, is that the word? More obvious parts of practice, we usually talk about the hindrances. So if I'm really sleepy, then I just have to do something very willful. I just have to put a lot of effort in my spine, or do a lot of deep breathing, or pranayama, and that doesn't call for subtlety. It calls for a kind of, come on, wake up. But not in a kind of military, harsh way. Just, no, this moment requires a lot of vitality. So I always, if there's a sleepy part in my sitting, then I just spend most of the time pushing my spine up into the ceiling, just like that. And I've done that for many, many years, and that's really, feels great, just like a long yoga stretch. But it's quite willful. But it's not the willfulness of trying to get rid of or become, it's just more energy. So the question you need to consider is, what is right effort? So from right understanding, you get right intention. And from right intention, you get right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So what is right effort? Well, if it's in line with right understanding, what are we here for? What's the program? Is it, what's the project? How does that work? Then the intention you put behind your effort will be correct. It will be right in terms of, it'll be on the path. Not right in some kind of absolute, holy, religious term, but just in terms of effectiveness and in line with the teaching, in line with right understanding. So you have right intention, and then from that intention, right effort really depends on where you're at in the moment, what your energy system's like, and what your mental habits are like, and how your body's feeling, da-da-da-da. So in terms of something like dullness and restlessness, there's different effort needed. When I feel pain, I get restless. When I feel sleepy, the pain isn't so strong, actually. It's just like the mind's just kind of fog-bound, like porridge in your brain, right? Very much up here, isn't it? When you're sleepy, it's a kind of all coagulated blood pudding. That's a good image. And so you've got to kind of come down here, don't you? Yeah, just bring it down here, get it into your hara, and then like really, you know, rev out the spinal column, and just really get the body vibrating. But when I have, like, if I'm not sleepy and there's a lot of discomfort in the body, and sometimes the discomfort isn't necessarily like painful knees, that just the body's just tense for some reason, that's a different kind of effort. Isn't it? It's a different kind of effort. I need to just, like, if I have restlessness comes up, then I just kind of just do a lot with the out breath, and just really feel the out breath right to the end, and that's why I say don't rush the in breath. Just like feel the out breath right to the end. Just feel it through my hands, feel it through my legs, feel the bottom of my belly going, like really relaxing. Not rushing the in-breath, those kinds of attitudes. And if I did that with dullness, well, I'd have my head on the floor, wouldn't I? That wouldn't work. So what is right effort? And that's always going to be different. But with experience, like you have a different hand, but you have the same deck, with experience you recognize, don't you? You know how to work with dullness, you know how to work with restlessness. Doubt, the kind of get just the whole thinking mind that we lose attention through, that's very hard, isn't it, where we can just go off into thought patterns. So some strategies around thinking is like all that planning stuff that we do, at some point we say, not today. I've just done that for 40 years, just not today, thank you very much. Right? Somehow you have to give it up. Right? It's not important. yes, it is. No. No. Some kind of refusal. It's not repressive. It's just not going there. It's prioritizing where you're going to go with that. And why do you do that? Well, you just become tired of it, and you know it's not productive, and you know it's just a hook of interest or a hook of fascination, whatever it is. You say, oh, there you go again. Okay, yeah, but. So giving up, renunciation. That's not repression. It can be done repressively. It can be done through some, I mustn't think, but that's not right understanding. But right understanding is like giving up something. And then if you get some really negative material coming up, like I had, when I spoke about my mom, then that later on, when was it this morning, triggered a memory of my mom's last 3 days, which were not nice, which were very, very difficult. And that's a very unpleasant emotion, a very strong, unpleasant, to say the least, right? And it's very vivid still. But I just thought, oh yeah, I know what that is, I know that. And I just waited it out, didn't add to it, didn't deny it, didn't add to it. I just didn't run with the imagery, because the imagery is very, very strong. I didn't run with a story and the usual, I should have done this and I should have done that, that kind of stuff. I just didn't go there. And then, very strong in the mind, but then it goes away again. So what's right effort there is non-attachment, non-grasping. You can use thoughts. You kind of keep coming up with resentment against someone for something that is, your resentment is justified. Let's say they really ripped you off in some horrible way, and the resentment is kind of justified, but you know that's not going to go anywhere, that's not going to win. And you say, resentment feels this way, that might work, maybe not, maybe you have to say, and I forgive you, no I don't. I see, that's interesting, what's that about? So sometimes you have material coming up which is quite unprocessed, right? You have to process your cheese. It hasn't had a chance to resolve itself. It's sort of in the background of consciousness, and now you're fully awake and fully conscious, and now some strong material comes up. Then what do you do with it? Well, for me, body awareness. So that would happen with if I've had a kind of complicated situation at the monastery, and people have come at me, and maybe they've spoken to me in ways which are unskillful. And maybe I've spoken to them unskillful, not much, but let's say that does happen. Welcome to humanity. And then you sit, and what do you get? You get the impact that happened in the meetings or whatever, and the biases against the person, and keeps coming up, doesn't it? Keeps coming up, and that body awareness is tremendous, just like the energies which those memories are now triggering, they come up. And that's that you have to process, don't you? You have to allow the mind to resolve the vipaka kamma, the results of that. Those get lodged in your mind and body. We all know that. And oftentimes life doesn't give us the time to process them. So lo and behold, you come on a retreat and you come for peace and you get that. Mm-hmm. I didn't come here for that, but actually that's important. That's very important if it comes up. So if you keep with non-grasping, non-attachment, and being able to accept the pleasant and the unpleasant, you keep that understanding, then you can bear with the unpleasant nature of old karma. And that's usually, for me, that has a lot of physical elements in it. It's not just narrative, like habit, thoughts of planning and so on. Those are pretty shallow in terms of bodily energies. You can still feel them in the head, but in terms of bodily energies, they're not much. They're just the mind just likes to do that. No, sorry, not going there. But other things which have accumulated through powerful human interactions, and like powerful people coming at each other, saying and doing things, those get lodged in the body, don't they? Quite strongly, and so sometimes you just have to bear them as they come through. So body awareness, and if you can do this sense of whole body awareness and this sense of letting it become conscious. I don't know if that idea is coming across, and just waiting for things to become conscious, then it'll go through your body. And the thinking mind will want to pick up the narratives, but you're trying to see this just as energy forms now. And obviously the narratives are there. And then your mind will think, I'm going to say this and I'm going to say that. And you say, I don't believe you, Mara. I did that. I did that for 20 years and it did not work. And you trust more in awareness. And then things resolve themselves socially because you're more aware. So right effort's a very part of the craft, and something that you become attuned to according to your own makeup and according to your own energies. So whatever object of meditation you pick up, it's not always the same.